This is Center Court with Hall of Fame basketball player Ralph Sampson. Center Court is presented by the Winner's Circle Network in conjunction with the Sampson Family Foundation, striving to uplift, empower, and educate the communities we live in. Now here's Ralph and your host, Mac McDonald.
Welcome into Center Court on the Winner's Circle Network with Ralph Sampson. I'm your host, Mac McDonald. Our guest today is one John Crotty, a guy that he had several places that he could have gone to play basketball. His dad played at North Carolina. Yes, he was considering Chapel Hill, but he ended up at Virginia. He set records at Virginia as one of the most outstanding point guards to play in the college game. And then after his NBA career that, you know, it spanned 477 games, he took that point guard intensity and he turned it into business as a real estate guy and also a member of the Orange Bowl committee. Ralph, wouldn't you say that John Crotty is simply a grinder?
The story is amazing as far as how he started and how he got there and how he stayed in the NBA for so many years. And then life after the NBA, very interesting to see what he's doing there as well.
I think he's reached $1 billion in real estate sales. He's on the Orange Bowl committee. He's very prominent in that, in selecting, you know, the Orange Bowl participants. And then not to mention, he's doing Miami Heat TV. And he's become a motivational speaker on top of that. So he's just I love talking to him. And, you know, for what he proved at UVA, and he was just one of those point guards that I know that, you know, you followed after your career. You know, he was such a good player for Jeff Jones and Terry Holland. He really was.
He fit the UVA culture. And then obviously, you know, life after UVA, it's been pretty good to him, right?
Yeah.
You know, NBA career and $1 billion real estate business down in Florida and still involved with basketball with the Miami Heat, which is even more special because not too many guys are able to do that.
I mean, yeah.
I went back and coached a little bit, but it's hard to get that new job because you got to start over like it's, you know, coming out of college. And he's done extremely well.
Yeah, his 12-year career in the league, 92-03, 1,900 points, not, you know, sterling numbers, but he played for the Jazz, the Cleveland Cavaliers, Miami Heat, Portland, Seattle, Detroit, Denver, and he played in 477 games. So, but it was 1991 when he got cut by Charlotte. He said during an interview that I heard this week, he said that just hit him in the face. Because he thought, okay, my career's over. You experienced a little of the same thing. It's hard to say, I'm done with this.
It is. It's hard to say when. You you think you still have, you know, another year or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was unfortunate because of my injuries. But John's a bench guy, right? He keeps the bench together, keeps the locker room together,
right.
Keeps the team together. He's going to go out there and play hard every night and be ready to play every night. And you need those type of guys on your team to make sure the team stays together. And he's that type of guy. But he probably could have played another year just the way he was playing. But, you know, politics and the league and, you know, draft picks, whatever. So the numbers didn't add up. And, you know, you got to say when. And it's an adjustment after that, at least a year or even more of adjustment just to say, I can't play anymore. I can't go on a trip anymore. I can't go in the locker room anymore. That's hard to do.
Well, there's one word that describes him, the best adjective, gritty. And the gritty John Crotty joins us after we go to this break. This is the Winner's Circle Network, and this is Center Court with Ralph Sampson. Hang on. The mission for the Sampson Family Foundation is simple. We strive to uplift, empower, and educate the communities we live in. The foundation promotes charitable and community input, educational development, health and fitness, and scholarship opportunities. The Sampson Family Foundation's initiatives focus on patients with cancer, educational scholarship programs, and give students guidance in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The Sampson Family Foundation encourages limitless possibilities. Your financial support is tax deductible. To learn more, call 540-615-5097. The website is SampsonFamilyFoundation.org. Uplift, empower, educate. It takes teamwork to make the dream work.
From the defensive front of the Philadelphia 76ers, some chance of Crotty here at the First Union Center. Crotty off the glass. And he answered the crowd.
You're listening to Center Court with Hall of Famer Ralph Sampson. Center Court is presented by the Winner's Circle Network and the Sampson Family Foundation.
Welcome into the Winner's Circle Network, and this is Center Court with Ralph Sampson. Very special guest today, as we talked about in the open, and a guy that was truly, Ralph, I don't know if you've ever taken like all the point guards of Virginia and rated them, like your top five, your top, where would John Crotty fall as far as point guards at UVA?
Well, Mac, you know, I mean, I always say you cannot rate people or say who's the best and what. Uh-huh. I mean, is Michael the best? And, you know, got Scottie Pippen saying Michael wasn't the best, LeBron the best. So, you know, but you gotta go in eras to me, you know. Uh-huh. So to me, the best ever was Bill Russell in the NBA because of his, I think it was the best ever to play. But if you look at UVA guards, you know, you can go from, you know, early on to even now, who's the best? John Crotty being a left-hander, right? That's one thing.
Right.
You know, he might be the only left-handed guard we've ever had, right, at UVA, which you classify that. But I look at the whole body of work that he's done at UVA and afterwards, and he's got a rank in the top five just because.
I hope so.
The Ackerman of that from, you know, and I played with, you know, Jeff Jones, Ricky, Othell, right, whatever, you know, when right. I played with great. But I would have loved to play with this guy because he could shoot, he could drive, and he loved the pass.
He loved the pass.
He understood passes for a big guy, right?
I'm the assist leader in the school, man. I figured you'd love to play with me.
He loved the pass. So good. I love it.
And you heard Ralph totally dodge the question. So anyway, John Crotty.
That was politically correct. That was good. He loved the pass. I said the pass part at the end.
Yeah, welcome. It's great to talk to you. And between stints on the road. And John, of course, one of the outstanding guards to ever play at Virginia. And he was he played 11 NBA seasons after retiring from the NBA. He moved into sports broadcasting, which I love. He was a radio guy with the Heat, became the TV guy with the Heat now. And with everything else going on. So, John, welcome to the podcast and the show. It's great to talk to you and catch up. How is everything in sunny Miami?
Great, great. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's great. I was in Houston the other day and had an opportunity to be sitting in the media room before a game and saw that picture of Ralph on the wall and took a picture and texted it to him. And here we are. So it's just so great to reconnect and spend time with you guys. I'm doing great. I'm here in Miami. I live in Coral Gables here with my family. And, you know, I work real estate during the day, selling commercial real estate. I continue to broadcast Miami Heat games and travel with the team. We're back out on the road again after the COVID break, and I'm excited about this Miami Heat team this year. So life is good, guys. It's, you know, it's a blessing. It's great to be able to do what you love to do and see and connect with guys like you who meant a lot to me, obviously, from throughout my travels.
You mentioned you're excited about the Miami team. I got to get right to the NBA, but, you know, I'll come back to your 11-year career. But what excites you about the team this year, the NBA this year?
Sure.
You know, I have my opinion about the NBA, but I want to see somebody that sees it every day because, you know, my might be a little skewed to the bad side. But in your opinion of your team and what excites you about the team this year?
Well, I mean, look, the team specifically right now, I think, is from a chemistry perspective, Ralph, has come together much earlier than I thought. There's a lot of new players on the team. And along with that, some of the guys internally kind of have grown organically just through self-development. So we're seeing a guy like Tyler Hero, as an example, really come into his own this year, which has been fun to watch. We've got Kyle Lowry, who's an addition to the team, who's a real pure point guard, who's pushing pace, allowing the team to operate at a higher level with Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler able to, I think, really think about scoring more as opposed to being able to handle and distribute, which is what they did a lot last year, playing a little bit more deliberately. The defense has come together. The guys are connected. Just had a brutal 9-day road trip and lost some tough games, but lost the first three, one in overtime, one in the last, you know, minute type situation, and then rallied back with two wins. So, very road heavy schedule early, but, you know, just enjoying being back out on the road, period. We had a spell of a year and a half, obviously, where as a broadcaster, we weren't traveling and I was literally broadcasting games in an abandoned studio, basically, or at the arena on a 25-inch monitor, which is, you know, half the size of, or a third of the size of what most people are watching games on, and it was just so strange. And it's, so it's good to be out and reconnect with everybody. And, you know, the league as a whole to me is in a pretty healthy place. I think, you know, the huge emphasis on skill versus, you know, physicality, you know, has been fun to see and watch. It's been weird watching the amount of 3-point shots obviously being taken. Yeah. They're allowing a little more physicality this year, I think, which is good. They're trying to strike that balance between, you know, making continuing freedom of movement, but also allowing the defense a chance to compete. And, you know, they're trying to find that balance. And right now, I think they're doing a pretty good job of it.
You know, with your skill set back in, you talk about Kyle Lowry and the fast pace and guard and the physicality of the game, right? So when we played, we wouldn't have let a point guard come down the middle without being hit. And I'm sure you experienced some of that as well in your career, right? But would and everybody asks me all the time, would I have loved to play in the era? I think I could have played in this era for sure. And I don't know if they could have played in our area. But, you know, as a point guard, would you have loved to play to, in today's game and shoot the three, like, two steps over half court and let it go?
I know. It's incredible. And the thing to me that's amazing, Ralph, is, you know, the analytics, right? So there's such a push to the guard where, you know, if you can shoot 34% or greater actually beyond the arc, they want you to take that shot versus taking that pull-up jumper that, you know, maybe you shoot 40%, you know, at in the mid-range game, because you take more threes, they obviously add up. And that freedom right there from a guard perspective. I think the biggest thing to me is I would have loved to have played in this era, because I do think it would have allowed me to, you know, maybe be more effective in terms of attacking and driving and handling the ball. But, you know, the thing that was always shocking to me was the hand checking that was allowed back in the day when you were playing and I played. I mean, I'll never forget my rookie year making a move on Derek Harper, who was, you know, a very good NBA player.
Defense, yep.
Who never became an all-star, but really right on the cusp of it. I made a move. I went right to left crossover. I had him beat on a step. I leaned in. He put his hand right on my hip.
On your hip, push it out the way.
I was like Fred Flintstone with my feet like in the air, and he slid back in front of me. And I was like, wow. I'm like, this is the difference right here between, you know, where it was in college, or, you know, you could equate to today's NBA where you can't put your hands on guys, and what, you know, guys were allowed to do back in the day. And it's a big difference. I think the freedom of movement would have helped you though with your game.
Oh, absolutely.
And a lot of the skilled guys versus just, you know, big, strong guys in the post who are muscling people, which, you know, was a big part of the game. It's amazing how it's changed though in such a quick period of time over the last 5-6 years. How the game's, you know, stretched out with the shooting of Steph Curry and the way that 3-point line and the speed of the game is really taking over.
You guys had Goran Dragic on your team down there, and actually your game, his game, reminds me very similar, right? Because I coached Goran as a player development coach in Phoenix 2012-13, but I know you had him there. So when I watched him, it reminds me a little bit of you. I don't know if you have that opinion, but he's left-handed guy. Mm-hmm. I know he's not with the team now. He's moved on. But your opinion with that similarity, because I think you had the same skill sets more. I think you handle the ball better than he does, but he shoots the three very well.
Yeah, he's a good scorer. I love Goran and just love him as a competitor, and felt like we had that in common. The left-hand thing, for sure, we would joke about that. You know, just a real pro's pro and a real competitor and a great player in the NBA that was under the radar a lot of times, deserved to be more respected. But I think, you know, his ability to score really helped Miami down here. He was a very reliable point guard, but his ability to score and really be a one-man fast break for us at times.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the way he played and felt like he's a guy anyone would want to emulate their game after. Really good finisher, too, underrated at about 6'3", right. You know, slighter of body than me, but able to lean in and traffic and finish with that left hand at the rim. It's a good comparison, one I'm proud to have you, bring up, and that's cool that you got to work with him, because I think he's just a really quality guy. He's in Toronto right now. Looks like he's falling out of the rotation. Not an easy scenario, you know, for a guy who who's as accomplished as he is. So I'm sure he'll get a crack up there sooner or later.
John Crotty, our guest, one of the great guards to ever play at Virginia, 11 NBA seasons and now doing TV for Miami. We'll get to more of the history of John. Real quick, John, before we go to break, you know, quarterbacks who are left-handed throw off the whole offense, it seems, for an NFL. Is the left-handed point guard in basketball okay? There's not really a big difference, is there?
I don't think so. I mean, look, I think there's a lot more left-handers than ever playing. You know, to me, from a point guard perspective, it's really the onus is on the point guard to get everybody involved. And I think, you know, players respond to the fact that you're getting them the ball in the right spots, right? Mm-hmm. Versus worrying about left hand, right hand. I think there was an advantage at times where players would, you know, if they didn't know you, they would overplay your right hand. But in today's NBA, and when Ralph and I played, I mean, look, there was basic scouting reports. They knew what you were good at, and they tried to take it away whenever they could. So you better have a right hand if you're a left-handed player that you can, you know, take advantage of. Otherwise, you're not going to last very long in the league, you know.
You know, back then people would really try to hit you when you came through the lane using, like, forearms and stand you up and make contact and punish you, you know, throughout the course of the game, and you could never really hit Iverson. I used to try to stay between him and the basket and did a pretty good job there, but he was a hell of a player, loved his competitive fire.
You're listening to Center Court with Hall of Fame basketball player Ralph Sampson. Once again, here's Ralph and Mac.
Welcome back, Winner Circle Network, Center Court, and we are Center Court with Miami TV analyst John Crotty, former Cavalier, 477 games, 1,900 points, and he was just solid, you know, maybe not a lot of minutes, but just a solid player and now a very, very good TV guy. John, when you were looking to play college ball, if I'm not mistaken, I think what Notre Dame looked at you and North Carolina, I know they were your choices. Why Virginia and your affection for Terry Holland? He had to be a big part of your life.
Look, the recruiting thing was just an awesome experience for me. I was blessed. I was a McDonald's All-American, so top 25 in the country. And Ralph knows this. He was you know, the most sought-off player in the country. I was blessed to be a top 25. It allowed me to be recruited by, you know, everybody and mm-hmm. And really establish, you know, what I wanted to do. I think a huge influence on me was my father. My father played at the University of North Carolina for Frank McGuire from, like, 57 to 61.
Mm-hmm.
And Dean Smith was the assistant coach there. He won a championship. He was a freshman, actually, when they won a championship with Lenny Rosenbluth and beat Wilt Chamberlain. But I grew up being a Carolina fan and actually going to the Carolina basketball school and from a basketball camp perspective. So just kind of fell in love with following the ACC. And I was recruited. My top five schools that I took visits to were Carolina, were Virginia, Notre Dame, Villanova, and Stanford. There was a big emphasis in my family on, you know, having a great academic, you know, institution, mm-hmm. something that I could leave school with and have a great degree. You know, I wanted to play in a great conference as well and in a real competitive situation. And I wanted to have, you know, sort of a fun time while I was there, which is absolutely did everywhere I went. So, you know, that combination really is what lured me over to Virginia. They recruited me from the start with Coach Dave Odom and Jeff Jones and obviously Coach Holland. And, you know, to me, I felt like I saw myself, I had a path to be able to play, you know, and be the guy in terms of point guard on the team for my second year on, backing up John Johnson my first year. And then I, you know, love the academic nature of the school and had a great time on my visits from a social perspective too. So it was just a great mix for me. But, you know, I had some great options that I you know, could have done as well, but it was just Coach Holland. I think his sincerity, his demeanor is, you know, he's such a Southern gentleman as Ralph can talk to, but just a really sincere, good person who with no airs, who just tells it like it is. And, you know, in the recruiting world, that's kind of rare. That really made a difference to me.
Mac, let's frame this a little bit better.
Yeah, right? Frame it.
The father, UNC,
yeah.
Dean Smith, assistant coach, you know, the history there. But then the two, you know, that's the rarity that you choose Virginia and ACC yeah. over North Carolina, right?
I'll go in a little deeper for you, Ralph. So I would tell you, you know, Carolina was, they were hesitant with play, recruiting sons of former players. I think there was a bad experience with that. And you know, their recruiting was, I would say, a little more lower key than Virginia's, and certainly Villanova's, who are, you know, like my practices and my games. They had just won the NCAA championship, and that's a school up in my area, near my area in New Jersey. And then Notre Dame, you know, basically from my neck of the woods as an Irish Catholic, you know, going to Notre Dame is like going to heaven, you know. So a lot of people couldn't believe I didn't go there either. That might have been even more, you know, unexplainable than going to Carolina from my neck of the woods. But, you know, right. They were not in a conference at the time. They were independent. I wanted to be part of, the ACC. And then Carolina also, you know, they were recruiting other players, other McDonald's All-Americans, and seemed to put them ahead of me. And that, you know, that just didn't sit well with me at the time. So Virginia wound up being the right place for me. And I have absolutely no regrets. I couldn't be happier.
My guess is your dad, though, said it's your choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. My dad, and he'll be the first one to tell you, my dad was a very good high school player. He was the MVP of the New York, New Jersey, you know, high school all-star game. There was a pipeline with Frank McGuire at Carolina, taking all the good players from the Northeast down there. My dad got down to Carolina. They had three All-Americans on the team. His situation wasn't, you know, what he wanted it to be in terms of playing time and whatnot. So I think he said, you know, you got to do what's right for you. And I'll, you know, I want you to be able to play and be successful and happy. And, you know, don't go there because I went there. I want you to do what's right for you. And he and my mom were nothing but supportive about that. And that obviously made a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing story in a lot of ways, even after basketball experience to me, when you say that, especially having your parents involved. I had my parents involved in the decision, you know, Kentucky, I had Carolina, Virginia Tech, whatever, but your upbringing with parents, you mentioned about academics.
Yeah.
And then obviously UVA, Stanford, you know, Notre Dame is a great, all of them are a great academic institution. Maybe North Carolina is the least part of academics on that list for me anyway. It makes sense. My thought is, and some of these shows that we do, it transitioned well from after UVA to 11-year career in the NBA and now into life and business and commercial real estate and commentating. So, you know, young guys out there, I'm sure you can attest to and talk to them about your career, but that's kind of the ride that most athletes should look at, right? But they don't, because they don't go to school for 4 years. They one and done. You see that all the time, and I'm sure you hear some of the horror stories. Yeah. So the transition, what motivated you to get the academics, but also to be a, I mean, 11 years in the NBA. I mean, you got pension, you got 11 years in, you got insurance. I mean, we know all that stuff, right?
Right.
Some people don't stay 11 years, but you was able to stay in the league for 11 years. What made you do that, one? And then your academic piece and stuff you're doing today, how did all that at Virginia help you?
It's a great question. And it's one that I think, you know, Virginia, I point to that along with obviously my parents and whatnot, the influence they've had. But with Virginia, I felt like, you know, they taught me the life skills. And I really had, I would say, honestly, you know, unabashedly, I had the true student athlete experience. I mean, I wasn't sequestered. And you know this, Ralph, I think at Virginia, you know, you have the ability to become a real student and be involved in different activities and be involved in different clubs. I was in a fraternity, you know, those types of things, I think, really help round you out as a person. They give you, you know, much more of a perspective of life and being able to communicate and meet different types of people and make me think differently, you know, not just being in the whole athlete scenario where you're in an athletic dorm, you're only eating with athletes and basketball players and you're only thinking about playing ball, because obviously that's one small part of our life. And, you know, unfortunately, I can't do it forever either. But
right.
I think it allowed me to help with my transfer into my next career, because the skills I learned, I had confidence that, you know, I could do anything if I put my mind to it. They taught me how to think. And you know, what I realized is a lot of the qualities I had as a player too, that you can apply to business, which is, you know, hardworking, which is being a great communicator, which is being incredibly disciplined and tenacious, going after things that I want to go after. And those are qualities that, you know, you can apply to business. And, You know, it allowed me to help when I finished up after 11 years. I knew it was going to be a challenge, but you know, you go from making seven figures to making zero overnight. and, you know, that's a kick in the you know where.
Yeah, that's tough to do. Yeah,
yeah, you start off. I always tell the story. You start off. I'm carrying two duffel bags of stuff by myself. I retire. I got a wife, two kids, and I had two tractor trailer fulls of junk. You know, that I put up in front of my house, and I now I have to you know earn a living because I didn't make the incredible. Money that you know some players are making now, where you can sit on your backside the rest of your life. But and to me that's boring. So I jumped into real estate. I put roots down here in Miami, learned the business over the first 3 years. You know I really made very little money. What I did was I embraced a guy who was my mentor and he taught me the business and allowed me to really you know learn it. And then from that point on, I've been doing it now for about 18 years. It's been incredibly successful. And I eventually got into commentating through the radio shortly thereafter. But developing that real estate business was important because it was something outside of basketball and sports. And it's allowed me to live a very nice life as well and enjoy the commentating and using that passion, you know, for the game to stay in touch.
Stay involved. Yeah, stay in the game.
Yeah. It's a nice, you know, lifestyle for me.
Getting the bowl game together. He's trying to move real estate. The man's got basketball games. And he's going to break down this game right here.
It's tough to close out to a shooter who's 6'8", who's catching it up high and letting it go. And look, his teammates are doing a great job of finding him. He's getting into the open areas.
This is Center Court, presented by the Winner's Circle Network in association with the Sampson Family Foundation.
Welcome back, Center Court on the Winner's Circle Network. John Crotty is our guest of the Miami Heat television crew. 11 years in the NBA and, of course, former Virginia point guard. And, John, we were talking about the Orange Bowl committee, and you've really had a great run with them. You see some football games in your association with the Atlantic Coast Conference. Can you tell us, will there be a 12 or 16 team, 8 team playoff in our future in college football?
Well, look, I mean, there's all kinds of conversations going on now. My role with the committee, which has been, it's been a lot of fun. I'm obviously a volunteer. There's about 300 of us. I'm a member, which is a volunteer position, mm-hmm. basically, and about 150 of us that are active. But my role is as the ACC liaison. So I'm blessed to be able to go out to different ACC campuses. Obviously, whoever wins the ACC plays in our game when it's not a semifinal game. We have a semifinal game this year, which mm-hmm. is exciting. So, and I get to go and meet with the presidents and the ADs and the coaches and have a great, you know, history of being able to do that and having played in the ACC, have great relationships with a lot of those people. So look, there's been a lot of discussions with our strategic group, you know, about the desire to expand the playoff field. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see how it happens. It looks like it could be leaning that way, obviously. And, you know, but you can't argue with what's been going on, you know, as of late, because it's just incredibly compelling. I think the thing that's different about, you know, football is that every game is so important, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one loss can be the difference as opposed to having 30 games in a season, right? So, you know, that's the big thing. And the Bowls have been a big part of that. And, you know, what's really fun, and I really enjoyed having Virginia down, you know, a couple of years ago for the Orange Bowl, mm-hmm. Which was their first time down, is just, you know, that connectivity of seeing everyone come down and enjoy the whole festivities. That, you know, what we do is entertain folks down here. They go to great dinners. They have things that they do in the Miami area. The whole point of it is obviously economic development for the area,
right, but right. Sure.
So much more to that, because I think the memories the kids have coming down is invaluable. They'll always look back at, you know, going to the Orange Bowl is one of the premier things they did as a player.
Yeah, I think, I mean, any bowl game or NBA playoffs, whatever, it's only a certain number of people get to that level, right? So the festivities that go around it, and I believe it's after, you know, after playing, it's not just the game, it's the things around the game you enjoy, the camaraderie you built. I was at an event, Mac, mm-hmm. and John, over the weekend. This guy comes in and says, I remember you, whatever. I went to Almore High School, whatever, da 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 da. And thank you for the shoes. I'm like, I didn't give you any shoes. But he wore 16 and a half. They couldn't find shoes for him. So they went to UVA to the cage and got this kid at Albemarle High School a pair of 17 shoes they could wear at high school. And that was a Puma Pro kid, what it was. And he acted like I gave him the shoe and I knew him well. And I think, okay, great. So I had the story. But those type of things, if you reflect back on life, right, or those one-in-time moments that you build those camaraderies and those friendships that last for a lifetime.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, man, take the credit whenever you can get
it.
That's right. You know, they're going to sling an arrow or two at you, too. You might as well take that credit.
I took it. I had no choice.
And Ralph, the way John handled the playoff answer, he could be a commissioner. I mean, there's no doubt he could lead the charge. So if that happens.
You know, it's called skating, Mike. He skated over the question, which we do. It was good.
That must have been a class at UVA because you guys have excelled and it's been perfect. So so I'll transition to the broadcasting side then, because since we're all sitting here as broadcasters, and John, what was it about it near the end of your career where the bug bit and you said, hey, I think I can do this?
Well, look, Ralph knows what in the NBA, which is so incredibly invaluable, is they have an internship program where they try to allow players to develop skills to be able to transition from playing into the real world and real type jobs. And I tried to spend 2 weeks every summer thinking about, hey, what's next for me? I didn't know how long my trip was going to last. I was, you know, fortunate to last 11 years in the league. But one of the summers I spent doing an internship from a broadcasting perspective, because I thought it was just a natural fit for me as a point guard who thinks the game and being able to, articulate it maybe to the fans and see what I saw. And I did it actually when I was living here in Miami and just before the end of my career. And I actually in the summertime came in and I met with the head of the broadcasting department, who's currently today now my boss, my executive producer. Such a small world. Yeah. I sat down with the current play-by-play announcer, who was Eric Reed, who's my actual partner now on TV, which is amazing, right? And we did a fake game where we watched the game over with no sound, and he and I broadcasted the game together. I did two of those, and I had a real bug. I enjoyed it. I was passionate about it, and I made some tapes. I sent them around through their help, and about 2 years later, 3 years later, there was an opening, an opportunity with Miami from a radio perspective. And that's how I got my foot in the door. I was doing some TV, some regional TV and some lower level radio as well. So this all helped me get in with the heat. And as you guys know, that's part of the struggle is just getting, into the right. There's so few jobs and being able to get an opportunity. And then with a great team and organization. And I eventually took the radio, which I did for about 12 years, into a studio television position where I do radio, but I'd also do studio TV. So I had a lot of camera time and an opportunity to learn that art before recently over the last, this is my fourth year now as the game call broadcaster. So there's the play-by-play and I'm the color analyst. I've been doing that now for 4 years with the team. So it's been a great run. I've really enjoyed it. I think I've learned a little something from everything that's made me a better overall broadcaster.
So your play-by-play guy calls in sick. Could you handle play-by-play of a game?
Mac, you're angling for that job.
No. I just want to know if you're prepared.
Look, that's every color analyst's nightmare, right? It would not be a good, smooth thing having me do the play-by-play. Absolutely not. Look, my job to me is I tell the how and the why things are happening.
Sure.
He's sort of describing the action, right? He's the transition guy. He really is the point guard type guy of the broadcast, right? Where he's teeing me up and setting me up for different things. But that's a funny question because it is a nightmare at times. And we had these COVID protocols now where, we get tested regularly and we're like, God, if one of us, gets positive, the other guy's really on his own. Yeah. There's nobody to tap on the shoulder and come flying right in right away.
Sure. But see, you two guys were in the wrong business. So you should have been in the analytic business, right? And you could have been a UVA grad and go in and nothing about basketball, but know about analytics and got a great job, right? So automatically, but that's a great, great story as far as how your career transitioned from from the actually the sport. And it took a couple of years. I mean, I've done internships and programs and Wendy's and all that kind of stuff. But the NBA has great programs out there for athletes if they want to take the reins and go forward. So I appreciate that because I definitely know it there.
Yeah. I think more players should do it, Ralph.
Yes, absolutely.
And they don't. They should think about themselves in that transition because it's a really abrupt transition. And it can be shocking. And I think the worst thing is if you start trying to figure out after the fact, you have relationships already in the business while you're playing. That's when people want to help you, right? More often than not. So take advantage of that when you can. And the summer is a great opportunity to do that.
Well, like you said, you got to take advantage of it while you're playing because, you know, when it's over, like you said, when you're packing your bag, it's over, you got those two tractor trailers going home. It's like, okay, 2 or 3 years later, they don't know who the hell you are. They make no damn difference who you are at that point.
That's
the way it works.
Right?
You got to knock on the door and do it all over again, start from scratch, right?
That's right.
Great stuff. John, before we let you go, what's ahead? You know, you're a young guy, early 50s going on 30s. I like to think I'm, in my 40s. But anyway, what's next? Now, what do you see yourself doing in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, look, I love what I do. I think I've kind of created this role for myself, which is, doing deals and deal making during the course of my real estate career, but also having the passion of being able to call games and travel with the team and see friends and family throughout the course of my travels. So it's a pretty darn good life. I really think I've crafted a unique position and
that's terrific.
I see just doing more of the same right now, but I'll tell you, if I'm passionate about something else, I'll spin and go that route. I'm not afraid to make those types of changes and do that. I've done that, throughout the course of my life. And, I love seeing folks and spending time with them, reconnecting with you guys has been great. To me, that's what life's about. That's sort of the richness, of life and the two platforms I have allow me to really connect with people and do that. So more of the same right now, Mac, I guess.
That's awesome.
But Mike, he didn't add in coming to Virginia, being on a little mini farm. So when he comes out, we're going to be, talking tractors and gardens and zero turn mowers and all this other kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that day.
I hear, Ralph, with your farm up there in Harrisonburg, you're going to have to come down and show me how to take care of the tractor and,
get a zero turn, you're good.
I'm from New Jersey, man. I'm not Gentleman John the farmer, so I'm gonna need some help.
For sure.
I can see the book from John Crotty to John Deere. I mean, it all fits. John, thank you so much. Great to catch up, and you're truly, best to the family and everything, and good luck with the move and the transition, and of course, good luck to the Miami Heat the rest of the way.
Thanks, Mac. Ralph, thank you guys. Thanks for having me. Really great circling back with you guys.
No, thanks. Anytime we'll have you back and we'll keep it going, but definitely be in touch for sure. Thank you so much.
You got it, guys. Take care. Yeah. Thank you.
Former point guard, now TV analyst for the Miami Heat and entrepreneur and farmer in Albemarle County, John Crotty. We'll continue right after this.
To get into sportscasting, you need experience just to get your foot in the door. I can't tell you how many times in my career somebody will ask me, how do I get into your business? How do I become a sportscaster? The first thing I ask is, what have you done? Do you have any experience? And the answer is normally, nothing yet. It's because they couldn't find a program that provided the real-world experience that you need to get started. So I set out to create a program designed for the next wave of sportscasting talent. And my partner was an obvious one, Full Sail University. Great track record in entertainment and media, great alumni group, and the ability to evolve as the industry changes. We're offering a bachelor's degree that combines the professional expertise that my fellow sportscasters and I have built our careers on with the technologies shaping the world of sports. To succeed in this business, you have to be ready for what's next. But the core of great sportscasting, I don't think, will ever change. And this program brings it all together.
This is Center Court, presented by the Winner's Circle Network in association with the Sampson Family Foundation.
It's Center Court on the Winner's Circle Network with Ralph Sampson. Ralph, I enjoyed the visit with John Crotty. I think that he has meant so much to all the people around him, and he never really forgets his friends. He never forgets the people who, you know, worked with him along the way, maybe helped him along the way. I love the attitude. I love the drive. And I love the fact that John Crotty has always been that leader. You know, the point guards are leaders, and John Crotty has been just that.
I'm a bigger fan now because he has a little farm in Charlottesville. So I'm going to be excited about his coming to Charlottesville and between Charlottesville and Miami and working on the farm with him and teaching him a few things. So that's exciting for me at this stage of his career and life and mine as well.
Yeah, he did. He's a landowner now right outside the hook. We received from a show a week ago, and I enjoyed it. I listened to it live, Ralph, the Mike Haynes show, the former Oakland Raider. With his prostate cancer explanation and his fight and just how we received a note. And I won't embarrass where the note came from, but Mike, you know who you are, so thank you. He wrote the show and says, with Mike Haynes on center court, it may be the most important and impactful interview that Ralph and Mac have presented to date. Their discussion about prostate cancer has been a tremendous public service, and they deserve thanks. So, Mike, we appreciate that. And a year ago, when you said, hey, we're going to do this little podcast, you know, and all over the state of Virginia, which we love and love our affiliates, that was nice to get that note. That, you know, this is what we try to do, but it was nice to get that letter from Mike.
Oh, Mike, that's amazing. It's a good note to get. And, you know, when we did the Mike Haynes show, I mean, it kind of gave me goosebumps about his career, his, you know, gaining 25 pounds and getting back in shape. Thought he was going to maybe die early, and now I wanted to live till he's 125. So that show is, I mean, it means a lot to me, I'm sure to you as well, that we can do something like that, and we get an email from a fan out there that validates what we do. So that's thank you, Mike.
Well, now that we're through Thanksgiving, how long is your Christmas list?
It dwindles. It gets smaller every year. So mom and dad are the only one on the Christmas list. The kid and everybody else, they'll get money or phone call or something like that. One's in Japan. My son Robert's playing, so he'll get a phone call. And then Christmas comes so fast and so furious that you look up, it's December 10th. And like, okay. And Mac, I've always been a late shopper. Mm-hmm. And this year you can't be late because it's supply chain. So I got to figure it out real quick, but mom and dad will get whatever they want.
Yeah. I'm a Christmas Eve guy. I love Christmas
Eve. I love Christmas Eve. I'm a historical Christmas Eve guy. If I start the 23rd, I end up on the 24th, and I go everywhere that I can hang out for Christmas Day and New Year's on Christmas Eve, and I just have fun.
Good stuff. All right, big guy. I'll see you next week. We've got Dave Odom on deck. That's going to be terrific. So that's I'll see you fun. Next week. All right, man. For Ralph Sampson, I'm Mac McDonald, and that's Center Court on the Winner's Circle Network.
You've been listening to Center Court with Hall of Fame basketball player Ralph Sampson. Our podcast is available on the Believe Network at BLEAV.com. Center Court is presented by the Winner's Circle Network and the Sampson Family Foundation. For more information, log on to SampsonFamilyFoundation.org. Uplift, empower, educate. Teamwork makes the dream work.